This final lesson is such a very, very simple lesson. And yet sometimes the simplest points based on the best known scriptures are some that maybe we need the most. But I want to talk about Caleb. Remember also at the outset, very familiar scripture in Romans 15 and verse 4, where the Apostle Paul says, "For whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we through the patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope." And that's why I know that you spend a lot of time studying the Old Testament here in your Bible classes. And I know that sermons are preached on it from time to time. And it's been so thrilling to me to see these boys and girls right up front, so attentive, so reverent. This just means more than a person knows how to express. But these are lessons that they know. They know backward and forward. And there's so many valuable lessons in it for all of us. As we remember, Caleb, one of the 12 spies or scouts that were sent to check out the land that God had given to his people. Let's look at a few verses here in the last part of Numbers 13. Begin about 27. "And they came back, they said, 'We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flowed with milk and honey, and this is its fruit.'" And then, nevertheless, here comes the but. "The people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, the Hittites, the Jebusites, Amorites dwell in the mountains, Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses. You can imagine how excited they were getting. How concerned, how fearful. Caleb said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." That's Caleb. He's one of those. They all brought back, of course, a very favorable report of the land. Everybody readily, if they have any belief at all in God and the Bible, readily admit that heaven is a desirable place. It's a wonderful goal. We all say beautiful things about how heaven will be, how beautiful heaven must be. They brought back a favorable report. Oh, it just everything we could have hoped for. Here's the proof. Here's the fruit. But they saw large fortified cities. They saw giants. In other words, they saw how impossible it would be to take this promised land that God gave them. He promised to give it to them. And they could only see the fortified cities and the giants. This just loomed large before their eyes, and that's all they could think about. And so 10 of the 12 men said, "We are not able. They are stronger than we. We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." They gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak came from the giant, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." But God says, my servant Caleb has a different spirit. My servant Caleb has a different spirit. We see that in chapter 14 and verse 24. Because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. This is a point we want to emphasize in this lesson this evening, that Caleb had a different spirit. He followed the Lord fully. Not halfway and not half-heartedly and not with timidity and with filled with all kind of doubts, but he had a different spirit. He has followed me fully. He said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. And let me tell you, boys and girls and everybody else, we won't make it to heaven if we don't have that attitude. We won't make it to heaven if we don't have that attitude. We've got to say, let's do it. We are well able to overcome whatever problems, obstacles, difficulties, challenges might come before us. Someone asks you, you going to heaven? Well, I hope so. I think so. How much genuine confidence do we have? We're going. We're able. And we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. He did not serve the Lord in a half-hearted way. He didn't serve God halfway. There was no uncertainty, no indifference in the attitude of Caleb. He simply recognized, he believed what God had said in the first place. I'm going to give you this land. I'm going to give it to you. And he understood God's will, what God meant for them to do. They sent these 12 scouts, but simply so that they'd know exactly how it was and what they were going to do and what they were up against. The Lord doesn't expect us to do anything blindly. But he doesn't want us to scout out the land with the idea of seeing a bunch of obstacles that will intimidate us. Where we say, well, we just can't do it. Let's compare Caleb now with the other. Here's some real simple points, but don't just think about Caleb. We're not just thinking, this story is very, very well known. I know that. But we're thinking about us. We're thinking about you and me. And we're thinking about our plans. We just sang the song about Jordan, Stormy Banks, and we've got to cross Jordan, Stormy Banks, all of us, unless Christ comes first. And we are determined to go into the promised land. Well, Caleb had faith. He was determined. He didn't have any doubt. We see this, of course, throughout this record. Look at chapter 14. Let's notice some of these verses in particular that point this out. In verse 8, Caleb said, if the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. If the Lord is pleased with us today, if the Lord is pleased with our lives and with our service, with our devotion to him, don't you know that he's going to help us and see to it that we are successful in making this pilgrimage? 14 and verse 9, only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land. For they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. The Lord is with us. How strongly do we believe this? We say, well, right now, Jesus Christ is here. He's with us right now in this assembly, and he is. But the problem is we live in a world in which people, they've got to see it, you know, or hear it. They got to have this assurance from the five senses. I can't see heaven. You know, I can't see hell. I can't smell the smoke of hell. I can't hear the angel singing in heaven. You know, we walk by faith. We walk by faith and not by sight. But the Lord is with us. You know, the Lord is with those who know, understand, and accept and live by His ways, His thoughts and His ways. If we're with Him, He's with us. He will not forsake us unless we forsake Him. And we forsake Him by forsaking His ways, His teachings, His ways, His thoughts, clearly revealed in the Scripture. His ways, the home as God would have it, the church as the Lord established it, all of God's arrangements. He's with us as we respect Him and live according to His arrangements. The Lord is with us. What are you people afraid of? Caleb is saying, don't be afraid of them. You think they're stronger than God? You think those walled cities, God can't get over them? You think those giants can overcome God? The Lord is with us. Well, they didn't think so. They felt all alone, facing giants and walled cities. And that's exactly why there will be members of the church, people who have actually been baptized, who will go back into the world. They don't live with that confidence that God is with me and I can overcome. I feel so all alone. Job 23, of course we know how the story goes in the book of Job. Job had his ups and downs. He was severely tried. At one time he said, I go forward, but he's not there. And backward, but I cannot perceive him. When he works on the left hand, I cannot see him. And I think a lot of people feel that way sometimes. You know, just exactly, where is the Lord? Is the Lord really with us? Like Gideon said, you know, if the Lord's with us, why are we in this terrible condition? What about us? Philippians chapter 2, when we often quote verse 12, where Paul says, therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. And we stop there sometimes. I know I've quoted just verse 12 lots of times. And it makes a very important point. But look at verse 13. For it is God who works in you. See that? Look at verse 13. In your Bible, you probably have underlined, work out your own salvation. Well, go ahead and underline in verse 13, it is God who works in you, both to will and to do for His good pleasure. When we are following His teachings and we are living according to His thoughts and His ways, and we are seeking His presence and seeking to do just what He has said, He is with us and He's working in us, and He's working through us. God is with us. We've got to believe that. We walk by faith, not by sight. But He's there. He's there at our side. Oh, God's way off up in heaven, way up yonder, and He's... Yeah, He's in heaven, but He's with us. God's not limited. He is unlimited in every way. And He's with His people. Chapter 14, getting back to Numbers, getting back to what Caleb is saying here. In Numbers 14 and verse 11, in this case God, the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? How long will they not believe me? Now think about that. When these people are saying that we cannot take this land because of the giants and the walled cities, when they say that, they are rejecting God. They're unbelievers. They don't believe in God. Just ask them, do you people believe in God? Oh, yeah, we believe in God. But we can't take that land. Well, no, you don't believe in God. You're rejecting God. How long will they not believe me? Because God has said, I'm going to bring you in. I'm going to give you this land. I'm just going to give it to you. You're going to just go in and he had already, look what he had done in Egypt. The plagues and dividing the Red Sea and all of these things that God had demonstrated that he was with them and wanted to carry out this plan that he had. How long? How long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? Did they say, we don't believe God? There's no record of it. The record doesn't say that the people said, well, we don't believe in God anymore. It doesn't say that. But their actions did. Their actions said it loud and clear. And here's the scary thing. And every one of us, boys and girls and young couples and everybody, older people, all of us. This is dangerous. We're Christians. We are God's children. We are God's people. And if we say we cannot, aren't we saying God cannot? That's what this implies. That's exactly what this implies. When you say we cannot, look who you are. You're God's people. God's chosen people. So you're saying God cannot. And that's the way he took it. He said, how long will you not believe me? Caleb had courage instead of fear. And to whatever extent we lack courage, let's be determined to grow. To grow in knowledge and to grow in humility and to grow in courage. Think of the example of Jesus Christ above all. He's the perfect example. And the courage that he had. But Caleb had courage instead of fear. You recall what we read in Deuteronomy chapter 1, 21. Look, the Lord your God has set the land before you. Go up and possess it. As the Lord God of your fathers has spoken to you, do not fear or be discouraged. You know what the word discouraged? Look at the word discouraged. The dis. You see the word courage? And then dis. Negate. It's the negative. To be discouraged is to be without courage, isn't it? Just be careful about despondency, discouragement. You may be thinking, well, anybody can get discouraged. Well, be careful. Be careful. Let's not minimize it. It's serious. Because it's just the opposite of really having a courageous attitude in God's service. Caleb believed this. He believed this at first, and then he still believed it after 40 years in the wilderness. He believed it. The other 10 spies are saying, we are not able to go up against the people. They are stronger than we. And of course, they had the grasshopper complex. If you feel like that you, in God's service, when you're thinking of some challenge, some work, some obligation, something that you ought to be doing and it would be good to do, and you have this, can't do it, or it's just too hard. That's the grasshopper complex that we see here in these people. We're like grasshoppers. They had the grasshopper complex. And that is not befitting to God. That is not befitting. These people are to God's people today. But Caleb saw the very same. He was one of the 12 spies, and he saw the very same fortified cities. He saw the same giants that all the others saw. What he's saying here, he didn't go at this blindly. He's not a dreamer. He's a realist. He's a realist. He saw it. He saw exactly what they were up against. But the difference is that he had courage, he had faith. And he said, we are well able, because he knew that God had said that. He was not putting his confidence in that army of something over 600,000 men. That's not the point. We are well able to overcome it because God can do it. It's God's will. It's God's promise. He's going to do it. Of course, we will obey him. We will do whatever we are told to do. But in the bottom line, the final analysis, God's doing it. And brethren, we need this. All of us. Well, there are many challenges before every one of us, young and old. Caleb was optimistic. He was optimistic. He was not pessimistic. A pessimistic member of the church will discourage others if you let them. I mean, that would be the natural result. I ran out of time this morning, or I thought I did, and I didn't get to Philemon verse 7, where Paul said, told of brethren that were refreshed by you, brother. Here are people who are refreshed, according to this New King James Version, and that's the meaning of the word. You could use the word comfort or console, but the real meaning of Philemon verse 7 is to be refreshed. People, other Christians are refreshed by you. How do you feel when you're around certain other members of the church, brothers and sisters, men or women? After you're being with them, visiting with them, spending time with them, after a period of half an hour or so, whatever, how do you feel? Are you refreshed? Or do they get on your nerves? Do you feel like, boy, I'm glad that's over? How do we affect others? What are we doing for others? Caleb was optimistic. He was not pessimistic. He had complete confidence in God. They said, oh, it's a land that devours its inhabitants. These are men of great stature, and we were like grasshoppers. Caleb said, no, that's not the right concept. They're bread for us. They're ammunition for us. All these things that you see in them, their protection has departed from them. Rahab knew that. Remember what she told the spy? They're our bread. Their protection has departed from them. Remember Philippians chapter 1, the Apostle Paul says, he's writing to this church in Philippi, and he loved these brethren so much, and they loved him. There was a real close tie between the Philippian church and Paul, and they had fellowship with him from the very beginning, and I can certainly appreciate what we're reading here. But in Philippians 1 and verse 12, Paul wanted the church to know that his situation being a prisoner in Rome, that they should not be discouraged, they should not be pessimistic. He said, I want you to know, brethren, that the things that have happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel, so that it has become evident to the whole palace guard and to all the rest that my chains are in Christ. And most of the brethren in the Lord, having become confident by my chains, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. In other words, this condition that Paul was in, his imprisonment and all of these things that apparently would just ruin him, just put him out of the ministry, were actually contributing to the success of his ministry. God said, you're going to stand before kings. You're going to stand before important men. How in the world could he do it? Paul couldn't just go running up the palace steps and say, I want to preach to the governor. He couldn't say, oh, well, I'm going to preach to Felix today, or I'm going to preach to Festus today, or I'm going to go preach to the emperor in Rome. He couldn't do that, but he did. God said, you're going to, and he did. But in chains. Again, God knew what he was doing. And he knows in our case, in your case, in my case, he knows what he's doing. We've got to be optimistic with complete faith in God and in God's ways and in God's teaching. You know, God works through his teaching. This is his will. This is his word, his will. Caleb was a man of hope. He could see these people actually entering into taking possession of that land. And he had seen the land. And he said, this is ideal. I mean, this is tremendous. He had never seen the like of it. And just imagine these people who've been slaves in Egypt. And now here we're just right on the threshold of entering into a paradise on earth. How wonderful that would be. How in the world could you have a despairing attitude looking at that? But look at chapter, going back to Numbers again, in chapter 14. And so all the congregation lifted up their voices. Here are 10 men, the majority, of course, and they have completely disheartened the whole congregation. And one man, a preacher, an elder, it doesn't take a whole bunch of members to discourage the congregation. Sometimes there'll just be one influential member that will set off a chain reaction in the whole congregation. Don't ever be that person that would discourage somebody else. Christ said, if you cause at least one of these to stumble, it'd be better to have a millstone tied around your neck, sunk in the sea. We're trying to save people, but above all, let's don't cause anybody to stumble. All the children, they just wept that night, and they complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, oh, if only we had died in the lands of Egypt. If only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? They'd ready to go back to Egypt. They said to one another, let's just select a leader and return to Egypt. How soon they forgot the iron furnace of Egypt. Slavery, abject slavery. And yet they were willing to go back because they had no faith in God. They had only fear and despair because of this the people of the land of Canaan. But Caleb had absolutely no desire to return. And I hope that's the way of everybody here. Whatever your life was before conversion, and of course I know that in the case of most of us, that was a long time ago. But whatever it was, don't ever yearn for it. These people lifting up their voices and crying, if only we had died in Egypt. How soon they forgot the iron furnace of Egypt. Caleb had no desire to go back, much less die in Egypt or die in the wilderness. He was truly bound for the promised land. And what an example for me. Caleb's inspiring. He is a very, very inspiring. We're not minimizing Joshua at all. But the story here, of course, has to do primarily with Caleb. It's so very hard for some brethren to break with the world. Have strong family ties. They have habits. The world holds attraction for them. And a lot of times you'll find someone, even after they've obeyed the gospel, you'll hear certain little comments made from time to time that indicate that there's a yearning there. We have to break with the world. The world must not hold attraction for us. We must remember and never forget and think about it every day of our life that we are pilgrims and sojourners. This world is not our home. We're just passing through. We don't need to buy the hotel. We just need to rent a space for a little while. We cannot, we must not be too attached to this world. We used 1 Peter 2:11 the other night. Abstain, I beseech you, as pilgrims and sojourners, to abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul. Philippians 3:20, because our citizenship is in heaven. We're familiar with all these scriptures. What I'm trying to emphasize is that we must think about them every day, meditate. When we make decisions based on the fact that we're pilgrims. We're not permanent here. We're foreigners. You know, the feeling of being a foreigner, I mean, it's really something. Time and time again, being in foreign countries, you really know what it is to be a foreigner. Down there in one of these countries, Colombia or Venezuela or Nicaragua, and I love to be with the brethren and be worshiping with them and studying with them and all that, but I know for a fact that I'm not at home. I'm away from home. We're foreigners. Oh, but this is our home. This is a wonderful country. It's the greatest nation on earth. It certainly is. And there's so many things that we have, and so many possessions, and so many ties, and on and on we go. Be careful. Be careful. Or we may be like Lot's wife that couldn't keep from looking back. Or like these people that couldn't get their heart. They couldn't get their heart out of Egypt. It was down there. They wanted to go back. That's where their heart was. But our citizenship is in heaven. Yes, we're proud to be Americans. Very, very proud to be Americans. But is that our primary citizenship, being Americans? Do we take it seriously that our real, real citizenship is in heaven? Caleb knew that this struggle was worthwhile. Here's something else. Here's something else that I know good and well, that there are members that just don't think the struggle is worth it. They give up. Just not worthwhile. Go back to Numbers 14 again. And verse 7. The land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. What about heaven? What about heaven? What will heaven be like? You know, we don't have a whole lot of description. We have, of course, the city, four square, described in Revelation, and the word paradise. The word paradise impresses me because basically paradise means park, a beautiful park. We like that thought. Peaceful, restful, enjoyable in every way. When you think of heaven, what do you think of? When you think of heaven, and trying to picture ourselves in heaven. Well, I'll tell you one thing, this singing is one of the things that I always think of. Just imagine being with all of God's singers. And no wonder Revelation 14 says it's like thunder, like rolling thunder for volume, and sweet like the harpist playing his harp. But anyway, it's worthwhile. And all those scriptures that talk about that no more dying and no more crying and no more sickness and no more feebleness and no more sin and no more all the stuff we have to observe and read about and learn about and live with here on this earth, all gone. Wiped out, gone. And everything, beautiful, desirable, and positive, and no sorrow, no tears, nothing that's undesirable, painful, uncomfortable. But it's exceedingly good. land that flows with milk and honey. Well, is our promised land, is our home over there, less valuable than the land of Canaan? The land of Canaan was pretty valuable. I mean, I don't know how many I've read about so many different wars over fighting over that piece of real estate. But our home over there, how valuable is it? Is it worth the effort and the struggle to attain to this goal, whatever it costs? Whatever it costs. Whatever it costs. So far as time and effort and use of our talents and strength and resources. Well, anything. We know this. Anything in this life. Anything that's good. Anything that's desirable is going to cost you. Didn't it? Isn't that true? Anything that's good, anything that's desirable is going to cost you. It's going to cost you effort. It's going to cost you time. It's going to cost you money, exertion, sacrifice. Whatever is worthwhile costs. And so to refuse to deny ourselves and put forth genuine effort, make sacrifices for Christ, anyone that's dilatory, indifferent, negligent, not really putting the church first, that person is saying, it's just not worth it. And so we limp along, serving the Lord in a half-hearted way, like the five foolish virgins that just weren't ready. We prove that we truly believe that it's worth it by the effort that we make, the time we spend, the money we spend, the sacrifice we make for the Lord. So we ask ourselves the question, examine your life. Take inventory. Think of your life. Think of my life, how we're living. If we are refusing to put the Lord first, is that what we think of salvation? Is that what we think of the cross of Christ, the blood that He shed? Is that what we think of the church? Is that what we think of the salvation of others? The person that doesn't do his very, very best to make his marriage the best in the world, what's he saying? Not worth it. Those who do not do their utmost to rear their children as they should, what are they saying? Not worth it. But things like what we're talking about things that are worth whatever they cost. They're worth whatever they cost. Caleb knew that they were not alone. They acted as if they were. They acted as if, well, here we are. And look at us, you know. How well prepared are we to take on what we've seen in the land of Canaan? Numbers 14, 8 and 9. The Lord will bring us into this land. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. I'm repeating myself, but it's worth repeating. This could spell the difference between making it and not making it. This could spell the difference between going to heaven and not being ready. Every day of our lives, no matter what we're involved in, just keep in mind that the Lord can bring us into this wonderful home of the soul. So whatever the problem, whatever the opposition, whatever the difficulty, do not be intimidated. Joshua 1 and 5, I will not leave you or forsake you. How could they have done? Hebrews 13, 5, I will never forsake you. That's us. We're seeing a number of promises that were given a long time ago, but they're repeated to God's people over and over and over. We cannot overemphasize this point, that God is involved in our lives. We need to write this on the bathroom mirror. We need to get this before our eyes and think about it daily, that God is involved in our lives. We read Philippians 2:13, and there are many scriptures that
that indicate this.
We are not alone. We don't have to make it on our own. Just sheer willpower. No. God is working in us, both to will and to do His good pleasure. We've got to believe that. We must believe that. I can do all things through Christ. Paul didn't say, I'm so educated and I'm so talented and I'm all of this and I'm all, I can make it. I know I can make it. I got my mind made up. No, he said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. If Paul were just alone and on his own, he wouldn't have talked that way. But brethren, God, you know, we spend so much time explaining about miracles. And we do. I do too in class after class. And the purpose of miracles and all of that. But if we're not careful, we say, okay, no miracles, then God's not doing anything. But we're just on automatic pilot now, you know, and then just he just backed off and wait and see what happens. No way. That's just not so. God doesn't have to work a miracle to work. You need to write that down. God does not have to perform a miracle to be working. This is His world. This is God's world. We talk about the law of nature. We talk about Mother Nature. Who in the world is that? Who's Mother Nature? All these so-called natural laws, what are they? Well, they're God's laws. God's operating this universe. And just think, we read this story back here in Numbers and Joshua. Just think how involved that God was. He was interested. Well, just think how interested He's bound to be in His church, in His people, in His work, which is the fulfillment. It's the culmination, the consummation of all the plans that God was working on back in those ages past. If He was so interested back then in all the things that He did and getting Himself involved in those people, you think He's just backed off and left us alone? Brethren, God is involved in our lives. And again, we're talking about putting our complete confidence in His Word and following His Word and His teachings and recognizing the importance of the home, the family, the church, God's institutions, and work according to His will. Think His thoughts and work according to His ways. And you can rest assured that God is involved in such a life or in such a church. We know how involved He was with Joseph and with Esther and with Daniel and with Paul. Could He be less interested and involved in the lives of His people now? You know something else that Caleb saw? Caleb realized that it was now or never. They had reached a crucial point in their journey. Caleb knew that it was now or never. So he said, "Let's go up at once." And of course, they wouldn't go. They wouldn't go. And so look at chapter 14 and verse 29. God said, "Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness. You shall by no means enter the land." And then in verse 40, chapter 14 and verse 40, now when they, you know, when they realized what they had done, they realized what a predicament they were in, and God said, You're not going anywhere. You're going to die right here in this wilderness. And so then in verse 40 we read, they rose up early in the morning and they went up to the top of the mountain and they said, "Here we are. We're ready. We want to go to the promised land. We'll go up to the place that the Lord has promised." And God said, "No, you're not. No, you're not. It's too late. Do not grow up, lest you be defeated. The Lord is not among you. You showed clearly that you don't believe in God. You rejected God. You turned your back on God. You're afraid of these giants and these walled cities. The Lord is not among you. He's left you. You forsake me, I'll forsake you. If you don't forsake me, I won't forsake you. But they forsook God. They were unbelievers. You know, you and I today, we are so sure of the future. We're so sure that there's time enough yet. We have plans. There are things that we want to do with our lives, and we're going to do it. But there's plenty of time. Nothing's going to happen to me. You know, think of all these years and years and years that I've lived, and that's the way it's going to be. I mean, it's you know, the future, you can gauge the future by the past. It's going to be to keep on being the same way. That's one of the greatest deceptions of the devil. Untold thousands are dying daily. How much time did they have? For them, it was now or never. Remember the five foolish virgins? They arrived. They got there. Oh, they got there. Here we are. Let us in. Mm-mm. You're too late. You're not prepared for the wedding feast. Caleb did not vote with the majority. The 10 spies said, "We're not able." Caleb voted with the minority. It was just two, not just 2 against 10. It was 2 against the multitude. Only he and Joshua said, "We are well able." You remember the scriptures, Romans 12 and verse 2. Be not conformed to this world. Be not conformed to this world. 1 Peter 4 and verse, boys and girls, remember 1 Peter 4 and verse 4. When there's others around you that are doing things and you know they shouldn't do it, you're not going to do it. You don't do the things that they're doing. You don't dress the way worldly people dress. You don't talk the way they talk. You don't sing the music that they sing. You're not involved in that. And Peter said, they think it's strange. They think it's strange that you don't run with them. Let them think it. Let them think it. So what? Well, but sometimes kids will come home to mom and they say, well, but everybody's doing that. That's just exactly why you can't do it. That's just exactly why you can't do it. We're different. We're not with the majority. We're with the minority. Remember Paul, his second letter, 4:16, at my first defense, no one stood with me. All forsook me. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. Caleb did not let old age stop him. Joshua 14, verses 7 to 11. Now we jump over to this, where now this is after all they have finally entered into the land and taken the land and so forth. And chapter 14 and verse 7, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Now in verse 10, now behold, the Lord has kept me alive these 45 years. Verse 11, I'm as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. He was a spy at 40 and a warrior from 80 to 85. And Caleb didn't say, oh, but I'm old and I'm tired and I've done enough and I want to retire. You remember what the Apostle Paul said? I haven't attained. This is Paul the aged, but I have not attained. I'm not there. I haven't laid hold of the goalpost. But forgetting what lies behind and stretching forward to what lies ahead, press on toward the goal. He didn't seek the path of least resistance. Caleb sought new conquests. He sought new horizons. He's a tremendous example for us in so many ways. He said, give me this mountain. Verse 12, now therefore give me this mountain. He means the mountainous region of Hebron. What did he mean? Give me this mountain. Was he saying, now, you younger men, you go out and you conquer this. I want this for an inheritance. And so I want you young men to go out and conquer it for me. I want you to fight these giants and take these fortified cities for me, because I deserve it, because I'm old and I'm tired. Is that what he's saying? When he says, give me this mountain, what's he saying? He's saying, now, grant me the privilege of conquering this land. Isn't that something? Isn't that amazing? So very encouraging to see people accept challenges in spite of youth or in spite of advanced age. It's really inspiring. Young people, you can inspire the congregation. Paul said, Timothy, let no one despise your youth. Don't let anyone look down on you because you're young. You be an example. Preach the truth. Let no one despise you. So encouraging to see people accept challenges in spite of their youth or in spite of their advanced years. There are many handicapped people, and now they're using the word challenged, and I have no problem with that, because really there's a lot of relevance to the word challenged. But it's so thrilling to me when you see them accepting challenges. There's nothing that I enjoy more on TV than watching men who are confined to wheelchairs playing basketball. Isn't that something? Get in a wheelchair and play basketball. I heard of a coach. This young man came in and he was paralyzed. I don't remember the extent, but he was at least from the waist down. And he was talking to the coach and he started mentioning something about what he couldn't do. And the coach said, wait. You just tell me what you can do. All I want to hear is, what can you do? And that's it, brethren. That's it. That's it. Okay, here's this or here's that that limits me. Here's this problem. Here's something that now because of my age or because of illness or because of whatever, that I can't do this and I can't do that. That's not the point. What can you do? What do you have? What can you do? Show me what you can do. The key word in the book of Revelation, if you'll notice, throughout the book is overcome. The key verse of Revelation 17:14. And it's like Paul said in Romans 8:37, we are more than conquerors through Him who strengthens us. Members of the Church of Christ that are seeking for an easy religion, they're absolutely in the wrong church. They're just in the wrong church. I want a convenient religion. Don't talk to me about too many services or too many Bible classes or too many of this or too many of that. The Church of Christ is the church that was purchased on Mount Calvary with the blood of Jesus Christ, Acts 20 and verse 28. What are the mountains facing us? And here's where each of you will make application to my lesson. I can't make them. I can generalize. I can generalize. But you know, boys and girls, young men, young women, young couples, older people, what are the mountains facing us? And every single person here can relate to this and can apply this. The elders. The challenges for elders, phenomenal. Deacons, evangelists, teachers, and every member of the congregation. I don't have to go into detail on this because you know what I'm talking about. But what is our attitude toward these challenges? Give me this mountain. Give me this mountain. Problems? Of course. Absolutely. especially if you're growing. A church that's growing, I guarantee you, the problem will increase. That's just as certain as anything can be. Frustrations? Yes. But give me this mountain. Don't be pessimistic. Don't be doubtful. Don't be intimidated. Don't back away from it. Meet them with courage, always remembering that we're not alone. God is with us. This is God's work. This is not my work. This is God's work. Give me this mountain. Young people, we've already mentioned this, but young people, they face so much peer pressure. The pressure to do what all the other boys and girls are doing. Well, remember Caleb. Caleb had a different spirit. Caleb has followed me fully. The challenge to remain chaste and pure during your youth. The challenge in the classroom or wherever, if you encounter someone teaching something as false as evolution or that homosexuality is acceptable or anything else that of course, the devil through humanism is perpetrating. But Jesus never said it's going to be easy. He didn't say that. Narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way that leads to life. Well, anything that's worthwhile is difficult. Anything that is worthwhile costs. And we're talking about the way that leads to life. And there are few that find it. Because very few are going to accept the challenge. Matthew 10:34, I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. If you'd come after me, deny yourself. Take up your cross daily. Follow me. Over and over again. Ephesians 6:10-19, put on the whole armor. Just read that text carefully and think. Just think. Why would I need this and why would I need that? Well, we're engaged in a life and death struggle. A life and death battle. And it's a battle to be won. A battle we must not lose. Because it has eternal consequences. Let's remember Caleb. He didn't vote with a majority. He had a different spirit. He followed me fully. He had faith instead of doubt. He had courage instead of fear. He had optimism instead of pessimism. He had hope instead of despair. He knew the struggle was worthwhile because anything that is worthwhile, anything that's worthwhile, costs, but it's worth it. He knew they were not alone. For God, there are no fortified cities or giants. But if we say we cannot, we're actually saying God cannot. And He knew it was now or never, because there's no tomorrow. There's no tomorrow. You have plans for tomorrow, and of course we have to make plans. But always, as we make plans for tomorrow and next day and next week and next Sunday and next month and all that, always do it with that strong reservation, if God wills. Because in reality, tomorrow is an illusion. It's now or never. He didn't let His age stop Him. And so, the lesson is so simple, but let's just simply have a different spirit. Let's have this different spirit of Caleb and follow the Lord, not halfway, but fully. Have you made that start? Is there someone here this afternoon, someone that has not as yet obeyed the gospel? Is there someone here that needs to be restored, come back to your first love? Don't you think, don't you believe that this that this challenge is worthwhile. You know, for a lot of people, for many people, conversion itself is a tremendous challenge. It is no easy thing to deny yourself and take up your cross and follow Christ. This is, the Lord never did say it's easy. Sometimes I hear people talking, I hear brethren talking, and we want to emphasize that, you know, the gospel is simple. Well, to understand, it is. The gospel is simple to understand. But to say that it's easy to deny yourself and take up your cross and follow Christ, Jesus never said that. To put Christ first in your life, which of course is the only way to live as a Christian, it's a challenge. But it's a challenge that we can meet. We can overcome any obstacle, any difficulty that might confront us, because God is with us. It's His will. If you're here at this time and if you're accepted of the gospel invitation, why don't you take advantage of this wonderful, wonderful moment, the here and the now, and this with beloved family members, people who are so concerned about you. While we stand and sing the invitation song, the Lord's inviting you to come.